This is Adrian Paul, Duncan McLeod from Highlander, and you're listening to Blood of Kings on the Fandom Podcast Network.
Welcome, Highlander fans, to episode 39 of Blood of Kings, a Highlander podcast here on the Fandom Podcast Network. On this show, we cover all things Highlander, including guest interviews, movies, TV shows, books, audiobooks, games, special events, and another Blood of Kings Highlander TV series episode fan pick commentary. I'm Kevin, one of your Blood of Kings hosts, but you know I don't do this alone. I need my fellow immortal brother and fellow Highlander aficionado. With me is my co-host Norman. Dude, how are you, man?
I'm doing good, and I'm really excited about doing this show because we always have a good time doing the commentary episodes of these particular fan picks.
Yes, we've gotten pretty good experience with this. You know, we started a year ago with it was the original Highlander movie. Mm-hmm. On March 7th, the anniversary of the 30th anniversary of Highlander.
Yep.
I kind of called you up last minute and said, dude, let's do this. You know, this is before we actually started Blood of Kings.
Right.
We were doing the fandom Highlander fandom flashbacks.
Yep.
And then, of course, we did Highlander 2. Mm-hmm. Highlander 3. And then mm-hmm. we did Immortal Sins, the first fan pick. Hmm. And we got a lot of good feedback on those. And so, that kind of spawned this fan pick thing that we've been doing here. So, yeah. And then, of course, our second fan pick is Jill Burdick's pick of Shadows, which we covered in the last episode 38 and dove deep into our minds.
That's right. It's funny, too, because Shadows... it's an apt description of the episode, but I think the better description of this episode would be Highlander mind bleepery.
Yeah, exactly. And it still has me overthinking immortals and Highlander, dude, and if they're really immortals or just hard to kill.
Well, I think when we get done doing the commentary of this episode, maybe there'll be a revelation towards the end when we finally, you and I finally see at the same time the motivations and the agenda behind what John Garrick is actually exorcising on Duncan.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, one thing I wanted to review on this as well is the points that Jill had made in the last episode. We talked about how she felt the Ehrman story just seemed like an unpacking of Shadows, or Shadows was a foreshadow. See what I said? See what I did?
You are so clever.
Of the Ehrman story of, Duncan going mad. And of course, that led to the death of our beloved Richie. Mm-hmm. Do you think Richie's jacket survived?
Oh, for sure. For sure. I mean, you can take out an immortal, but you can't take out awesome fashion.
And of course, we touched on the new type of villain that this episode introduced. David Abramowitz had talked about that in the DVD special features. You know, they didn't want the biggest gun, the best swordsman. They wanted a different type of villain, someone that would get into your mind and take you down that way first and deconstruct everything, including preying on your emotions and your guilt of being an immortal that has survived for so long and killed so many people, and so many people he wanted to live didn't live.
Yeah.
So this dives deep into that, and I'm looking forward to doing this commentary because there's a lot of things that, like I mentioned in the last episode, wasn't a big fan of this episode at first because it fell under that mind bleepery pet peeve that I've had with a lot of TV show tropes that kind of do this every now and then.
Are you waiting for that to happen in series? Are you waiting to just have that massive like eye roll that makes you pass out? You're like, oh, here's that episode.
Yep. Yep. I always see it. It always happens something, you know, and I wanted to mention one of the movies I saw, I think it was in the, I don't know if it was in the late 80s or I think it was early 90s. That was the worst mind bleeper episode of all time, and I promised myself I would never watch it again. And that was Jacob's Ladder.
Oh,
remember
no.
that film?
Oh, yes, I do. Yes, I do.
And that movie just messed me up, and I ended up watching it when it was on those free HBO weekends that you get with your cable provider if you don't have it, you know, because they're trying to promote maybe the new season of Game of Thrones or something like that.
And that's what they promoted, Jacob's Ladder?
Well, you know, you get like a full like 4 days of free programming. And so Jacob's Ladder was on like late at night. I decided to watch it. And I ended up watching it and I was just like, I'm done. But my point is, I'm not a fan of that type of storytelling where you don't know if it's real or not. And after watching the episode of the movie, you're still not sure.
They should have they should have scored the final fight in this episode to Jefferson Starship's like White Rabbit. You know, like one pill makes you small. And the one, you know, like, because it is, it's very mind trippy. This episode.
I want a Blood of Kings soundtrack with you singing. Can we do that?
It's possible. I have about a liter of Kilhoman in front of me, and who knows, Highlander? Who knows?
Well, anyway, I like I said in the last episode, I have a new respect for this story and this episode in general. And I did mention, of course, I preferred the B plot a little bit more with the story of Anne and Duncan. We touched on that, and you know how fans had felt about that, and what was it, David Tynan? If I remember, what he said about it in the special features, and where we stood with that. So I'm looking forward to getting into this and just kind of bouncing off of you and seeing where it goes. Before we go into this, Norm, is there anything you wanted to kind of say before we dive into this?
Well, I think that it's interesting that our first two fan picks are almost bookends of a story, and that's Dr. Anne Lindsay's story. Because our first fan pick from Vince Stefanelli was Mortal Sins, and that had to do with kind of like the exiting of Anne's character because she couldn't come to terms with living in Duncan's violent life, being a doctor. She says, you know, I'm dedicated, you know, it's like I took an oath to save lives. I can't take lives or want to have lives taken. And in this episode, she's trying to make that connection, that deeper connection with Duncan so that she can find what she believes is the relationship that she wants. So it's interesting, even though we've done it in reverse, these two episodes very much are part of a very cohesive story for her. Yeah. And I think that's in a very surreptitious kind of way that they've come together through the fans for us to talk about.
Yeah, that excellent point. You know, we have Mortal Sins, which basically she becomes involved with Duncan's immortal secret underworld and realizes what's it about and how, you know, she can't be part of it because she's a doctor and she saves lives and Duncan obviously takes them. Where here, she's not in that world yet and she's at Duncan's, you know, Duncan is keeping her on the outside. And we had touched in the last episode, you know, one of the points that I made was I felt one of the reasons why this didn't work was not because of the actors, not chemistry, but I think it was the writing. And I really thought it would have been a lot more interesting is if Anne was brought into the world of immortals and the secret of sooner than she did. I think there would have been a lot better storytelling there. Because think about it. She's a doctor, you know, and if she finds out about Duncan's secret and they find a way to kind of bond about that, yet there could be some tension there as well about what she, you know, can you imagine her like trying to cover up some stuff with him because of the lives that he's taken? Mm-hmm. And, you know, maybe there could have been a story of, you know, her being a doctor and you know, being in the morgue, and then, you know, one of the immortals wakes up, you know, just things like that would have been a lot more interesting. And maybe they would have, those characters would have a chance to bond, not just on paper, but then the actors realizing that they know each other's secrets, they could have played off that. Yeah. That's just my take.
No, I think that's really good insight, and it very well could have happened if they had a chance to explore these characters a little bit further. Also, what I think is neat about a character like Anne is that that's the kind of character that Dawson could have folded into the Watchers.
Yeah, yeah. And just one thing, too. This reminded me of, do you remember when Force Awakens, Star Wars Force Awakens was being filmed and Harrison Ford broke his leg on the set, and they had to actually put filming on hold? Well, when that happened, the relationship between Rey and Finn was very adversarial that at the time, and that J.J. Abrams didn't like that. So they decided to kind of reshoot it and bring them to kind of play with each other a little bit more. Mm-hmm. And that really worked on screen. And that time that they had away from not filming because they were waiting for Harrison Ford to heal, that allowed him to make those changes, and those characters really worked well together during that scene, you know, when they were like escaping from Jakku and all that kind of stuff. So that reminded me of what could have been with the relationship between these two. So, so anyway, that's our quick take and what we had talked about in the last episode. I say we dive into this, Norm. You ready?
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, we're going to let the listeners know that we're going to pause our players right at the beginning of the episode where it has the intro and Duncan is in that alleyway. And, of course, we hear Joe's voice, you know, telling the story of Duncan and being immortal. So we're pausing it right at the beginning of there. And I'm going to go 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, play. And when I say the word play, that is when you push play. And I do want to tell our fans this, that even if you don't have the episode ready to watch, you can still enjoy this episode by listening to us, because we really talk a lot, don't we?
We do. It's kind of what we do here at Blood of Kings. We talk a lot about Highlander.
So we're going to be descriptive. We're going to let you know what's happening so you don't have to have the episode on. But if you do wish to follow along with this, just follow our cue and we'll get things going. You ready, Norm?
I am ready as I'll ever be. Is that too dramatic? All right, well, because this is a dramatic episode.
It is. It is. All right, here we go. Jill Burke's pick of Shadows, audio commentary. I'm going to start the countdown. You ready, Norm?
Ready.
All right. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, play. All right.
So
you know,
we're
I
watching,
remember we mentioned...
Oh, go ahead, go ahead.
I'm sorry, I just want to say real quick, this is where I'm really glad that they stuck with the Joe intro, you know, and because Joe knows how to... knows he's got a great voice.
Yeah.
And it's good. But anyway, you wanted to go ahead and say something.
No,
we're
talking about Jim Burns, and I think that it's smart that when we finally were introduced to the Watchers is when he started taking over the narrative, because the very first season, it was Duncan, and there was a lot of incredibly kinetic graphics talking about the immortals and quickenings and this, that, and the other thing. But I think finally in season 3, which is kind of like the magical season for a lot of TV series, a lot of things start to gel. And now we're seeing, I think Joe's voiceover is very reminiscent of, I'm a watcher and I'm recounting the tale of Duncan MacLeod.
What season does it change slightly in Jim Burns's telling of this as Joe, where he goes, Duncan MacLeod, may it be Duncan MacLeod. Like, he's kind of like rooting for him to be the final person. What season was that? Season 4?
That's season 4, when they have a little
season
bit
four.
More of a different openings. When
You know, their relationship has gotten closer, and you could tell that that Joe wants Duncan to be the guy.
Now, as we start in this episode, one of the things that I was curious about was, what is the piano piece that is being overlaid played in this episode? And it's actually Moonlight Sonata. It's Bach's Moonlight Sonata. And when I saw this scene, Kevin, I thought immediately of you, because I know how much you love giant fan iconography. And when I say fan, I mean the bladed kind.
It's become one of those tropes in Highlander, the big fans. You know, we talked about it a lot in Highlander 2, and they had it in Highlander 3.
But the tone of the story, especially with this piano overlay, is it already starts off as very maudlin, very bleak.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, that guitar case right there, we'll see it more later on that Joe has. That is a Fender case there that has a very distinctive tweed covering around it. Just being the musician side of me is going, yes, we'll see more of that later.
Stratocaster?
Yep, Strat. Yep.
I found
Fender Strat.
I found that the quote that Joe said there, like, I didn't know you played, from a watcher that has been watching Duncan since the mid-1970s, was a little strange.
Yeah, he pretty much knows, out of character.
He pretty much knows what Duncan has for breakfast, right? Like, literally.
Yeah. Okay, so is this where his dream starts? So when he was with Joe, that was reality. So he's gone home, he's gone to bed, and this is the dream that we're seeing, right?
I believe that this entire opening sequence is a dream, and I want to take it from the perspective of a first-time viewer. When I was watching this for the first time, I was like, okay, he's at Joe's. And then I always found that, like, in that line where he's like, I didn't know you played, a little odd. You're seeing something very dream-like in this scene. And you mentioned this before in the previous episode, that this is one of five scenes that F. Brod McAsh fought in a very kind of hindered kind of way, because he was wearing the robe and he was wearing a fencing mask and it was very dark. I wear fencing masks when I do HEMA, and believe me, I completely understand what he's talking about, where you don't really have the best vision.
Well, he got to play the role as a shadow, F. Brod McAsh, and it's cool knowing that. But before I saw the special features, I was like, that guy moves like F. Brod. I wonder if that's him. And it's nice to know that, as he said in the special features, that he actually got to kill Duncan MacLeod, but, of course, in a dream sequence.
This is also the scene where it kind of reminds me of, like, Duncan MacLeod fighting the Nazgul.
Yeah, that's right.
But, you know, okay, so obviously, because of this reaction, we know that this is a dream sequence, and we have the lovely Ann Lindsay in a relationship now with Duncan MacLeod, because previous episodes, several episodes ago, she was introduced to us in The Revolutionary, and now we know that their relationship has progressed. But we're coming up on a scene now, Kevin, that something bothers you. You mentioned this in the episode before, that the scene, the tone of the scene and the way that Duncan approaches his relationship with Anne is something that really bothered you, the way that Adrian played this scene.
Yeah, it's right here where, she cares for him. She's worried about him. She loves him. Mm-hmm. And he's having to keep her at arm's length. And there's this comment that he says coming up here it's just one of those things that I think in real life too can be insensitive. Mm-hmm. This is one of those things where if she knew about his immortality, this scene would take on a completely different role and they would be so much closer.
Now,
so here she goes. So this is the scene right here. You know, if there's something wrong, would you tell me?
Very brusque.
Yeah. And then he's just basically, he's lying to her right now. She says, of course I tell you, but he's not.
Yeah, but why? But it's there's the difference between, of course I would tell you, as opposed to, why wouldn't I? You know, there's the connection, and then there's very defensive posturing. And I'm wondering that if this was one of those, are the actors not finding the rhythm between themselves in this aspect, or is it Duncan, Adrian as Duncan, being that character?
Yeah, it, like I said, it's the writing too, you know.
So now we're introduced to Corey Lightning, or Corey Lightning. Yeah.
Yeah.
I know that they're trying to find a way for Richie to fit into this episode.
Yeah. See, this is another thing too. Okay, so he's immortal right now, right? Okay.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But he's kind of doing the Richie thing still. He's trying to be the promoter, the getting the angle, getting the deal thing. Mm-hmm. And you know, they're still trying to find what Richie's going to be.
That hey, buddy. I'm like, oh.
Yeah. You're not liking that?
it's a little over. It's over the top even for Richie. But then again, this is the guy who can fight off immortals with hot dogs. So, you know.
That was such a 90s look, though. The motorcycle rock and roll jacket with the backwards hat and the baggy pants. Remember the baggy pants in the 90s?
Oh, totally. Parachute pants. Yeah.
No, well, no. Parachute pants were the 80s. I'm talking about the loose style Levi's.
Oh, yeah.
Levi's was 501 was it for the longest time. And then they started, I know because I used to work at a place that sold Levi's. And they started doing the loose baggy fit versions.
That look that Duncan gave, did he know that Richie was coming up? He's like, I'm out of here. I don't even want to deal.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Now pay attention to the loft, people, because this is one of those occasions where the loft isn't going to be the loft much later on. It's funny, when I watched this particular scene, the first thing that I came up with, and maybe Aaron can agree with me on this, when I see these gargoyles, the first thing that I thought of was Buffy, because that it very much looked like the opening of Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
And, it does, yeah. Yes. Yes, now, it does.
Now, you see off in the back, you saw like a little hint of who the artist is. The artist of this particular stone sculpture exhibit, his name is Garrick. Why that wasn't written in the actual write-up in the newspaper is kind of interesting, because you would think that, you know, Adrian would be like, or Duncan would be like, oh, you know, Garrick, that's interesting.
This is a rare sunny day in Seacouver.
Interesting questions that Anne's asking. You know, I think this is the first time she's seen Duncan experience the immortal buzz.
Yeah. It's like, what's he doing? Why is he all paranoid? Why does he keep looking over his shoulder?
What'd you think of the actor who played Garrick?
You know, I not completely sold on him. I would have liked someone a little more, I don't know. Maybe it was the look that was bothering me, you know, but I think in a way it works though. He's kind of unassuming, you mm-hmm. know. He's someone that can kind of, you know, hide in a crowd. So I think that's kind of the reason. If when you look at all the other bad guys, there's something about them that stands out. So, you know, maybe that's a good thing the way that he was portrayed. So.
Now we're jumping into our first flashback, and we know that Garrick is a stonecutter or has that kind of stone sculpting experience. We know that the tone and the tenor of this flashback, we're dealing with obviously somewhere in the 1700s where I love that chamber pot getting thrown right out into the middle of the street. And they wonder why that disease was run rampant throughout the cities.
Yes. No proper toilets or outhouses. Let's just throw them on the road.
Yep, and then you just walk right through it, walk into somebody's house, and hey, you know what? That's okay. So this is around the same time. I love the way that Duncan is dressed here, because this is kind of like that the same time where he ran into like Amanda and Rebecca later on.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah. And this is something that you brought up earlier in the previous podcast. He's looking for Garrick, the stonecutter. He knows who Garrick is, but I don't think that you felt satisfied with how that relationship started. Why is he looking for Garrick? And then where did all of a sudden he finds Garrick in this predicament?
Yeah, why he cares for him. I know there's reference to his family dying, and maybe he had more history with Garrick and the family that he had. But yeah, this is the one thing that just didn't quite sit with me.
The cat is immortal. Oh, look, a close-up of his ring. That could possibly be significant later. Also the cat.
Okay, so did he snap because he lost his family, or was he always kind of crazy before he lost his family?
It was my impression that because he has this gift of the sight, and because he is immortal, I think he's just troubled. I think he is significantly a troubled immortal, and perhaps that's why that Duncan gravitated towards him, because you like you said before in our previous episode in 38 that Duncan is kind of drawn to hard luck cases and tries to champion them and tries to help them along. But I think that he's kind of like, you know, he's a little off.
Yeah. And he's being sentenced to death to what, be burned at the stake, because his family was killed in a fire?
It wasn't a far, but for this particular execution is how they dealt with witchcraft.
Right, and they think that because he had some foresight or some vision, he has the power of witchcraft, and so therefore they burn witches at the stake.
Yeah, exactly. So you're dealing a lot with like the Puritanism of the time, the scourging by fire so that your soul is cleansed before you go to heaven, yada, 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 all that kind of stuff. So I'm waiting for the Spanish Inquisition to kind of jump out because no one expects the Spanish Inquisition.
What is the title of the guy that is the guy with the red hat, the one that's sentencing these guys? What is their title?
Well, usually someone in a red hat is like a cardinal or a bishop. This case is probably a bishop because the cardinals wouldn't come to this lowly of a district. But this is something that I thought was really interesting, that Garrick is so mad that he's like, you know what? I'm going to expose us in front of all these people. Now, why do you think that would be a good idea, Garrick?
You know, when I first saw this scene too, I started thinking of that interview with the writer, one of the writers for Gillian Horvath, where she says when a mortal comes back from being dead after being killed. With Duncan, it always happens a lot sooner than most other people.
We have to facilitate the story for sure. Yeah.
Can he control, like, what happens to you when you come back from being killed? Because it just gave away that he is immortal here to some degree. I mean, could he pretend to just play dead and not be discovered like this?
You know,
or is this involuntary, like, breath of air shoved into your lungs and then you come back to life and you can't control it like a hiccup, you know?
Well, I think there are so many different examples of the inconsistency with that, because some people are like, well, he can't come back unless you pull the dagger out of his heart because that's what killed him in the first place. So,
yeah.
So what's happening here is that Duncan's he's obviously being the champion of good. He's like, you know what? You guys have made a huge mistake. He's throwing the Dio devil eye at people,
yes,
which is awesome, right? You know, that's the warding of evil, which is Ronnie James Dio's signature
move. The last
move.
In line.
Exactly. He's a man on the silver mountain. You know, sorry, singing happens on the Blood of Kings podcast and any podcast on the Fandom Podcast Network. Anyway, so he's throwing the evil eye because he knows that these are a superstitious, cowardly people. They believe in this kind of this legendary superstition of witches.
And Duncan saw him escape, so he thinks he's going to live.
Yes.
We'll come back to that later.
He believed that he got Garrick on that horse, and he ran out of town, Garrick alongside him.
So Garrick likes to make gargoyles and demons. Red flag?
He believes that he is exercising his particular personal demons and fears into the statues themselves. And
I wonder where they got these props, if they were made by some stagehand or if they rented these from somewhere. Like they went to Goth R Us somewhere and
they went to PacSun or maybe Spencer's.
Yeah, Spencer's, yeah.
But when I was at the 1998 convention in Anaheim, I was looking for these kind of pieces because I wasn't sure if the prop department was selling them. They sold a bunch of different things, but they didn't sell these particular pieces. But, you know, these are kind of twisted. I mean, these gargoyles are kind of twisted. And he gave one to Duncan. And I don't, that wasn't a friendly gift. There was a very specific reason why he gave him that statue, and that's so that Duncan's consistently reminded of the demons of himself.
Yeah, exactly. And it's funny, he's carrying that thing like it's a sack of potatoes. You know what? He's actually carrying that like it's a burden, like Frodo in the One Ring.
Right. Now
this is a really cool scene. I really like this scene here. But this is one of those things where it's like, you know, the mind bleepery kicks in, but of course it's all in Duncan's head.
And of course, because Duncan is suffering from these delusions and because he hasn't had a lot of sleep, the significant part of his makeup and wardrobe is his 5 o'clock shadow.
Yes. I love that shot, though, of the shadow jumping off the waterfall like that.
And it was only for a brief second or two. And then Anne's like, what is going on? She's like significantly freaked out. And of course, you have Sea Cooper's Finest. on the scene.
Do you have to give C. Cooper's Finest like the tiniest guns ever? Have you noticed that?
Now, I think that we are we're seeing kind of like the thrust of what's happening in this episode. There's something significant going on with Duncan's psyche. And he's lucky that Anne's along for the ride, because I like how she like pulls out her business card. I'm a doctor. Like Bones, you know, like, I'm a doctor. Yeah. Everything's cool.
And she tells his story that he's an antique dealer and she's just being shown the sword.
Right. I think that it's kind of tropish to go for like, hey, Bruce, kind of like keep the sword, you know, out of.
Right.
Like, why does it always got to be about Bruce Lee? But hey, you know, obviously if there's martial arts, Bruce Lee is the first person you think about.
Yes.
But you talked about this also before, like the general concern that she has for Duncan in her reaction shots and how Lisa Howard is really playing this well.
Yeah, look at this scene. She's not even facing forward in the car. She's looking straight at him. And this is one of my favorite scenes because she is selling it. Mm-hmm. Lisa Howard is doing a great job right now. And Duncan there, he's being a jerk. And she's really worried and she loves him.
Right. And she's hitting that brick wall like on many occasions in this episode. And she's trying to do her best because she believes that there's something special.
Here's that Fender Stratocaster that I'm sure is probably owned by Joe Dawson himself.
Oh, sure.
Jim Burns.
Yeah.
I have a Stratocaster myself, and I have a similar case just like that, and there's nothing like that.
Giant fan.
Giant fan.
And Duncan remembers this from his dream. So here's one of those instances where when you saw that as his dream sequence in the beginning of the episode, is there an Inception level dynamic going on here?
Whoa, you just dropped Inception on this.
I did. Also, I always found that curious, that line still when Joe says, I didn't know you played.
Yeah, that should be in the Watcher Chronicles somewhere.
You would think. I'm just saying. Yeah. But maybe the reason why they use that is because it's so out of Duncan's character to be able to play with that kind of quality that Joe's like, that seems strange to me.
Okay, so right now, Garrick, is he planning right now to kill Duncan in his way of wearing him down mentally? Or has he not made that decision yet?
No, I think that he's playing the longest con ever. You know, he's very patient and very methodical.
Why doesn't he just pull out a knife and just, you know?
Well, you know, I don't want to jump ahead. I don't want to jump ahead because we're doing this. Save that question for our afterthoughts, because that's a really good question. And I have a very...
Or do you you know what? Okay. Garrick, I think, is also not only planning his death, I think he's thriving on this. This is something that he likes to do, and I think that he's getting a power trip out of it as well, to be honest with you.
Well, you can see that he has really great reactions to Duncan's questions, and I think that's part of the actor just knowing that his thrust, his motivation is that he has to show his motivations every once in a while, because you know that he's not quite right. You know that
right.
Even though that he is part of Duncan's history, doesn't necessarily make him a friend.
And Garrick just revealed behind these big doors the shadow statue that he has done.
Exactly.
I wonder if F. Braun had to kind of model for that in costume.
Well, the neat thing about that is that icon of the shadow is both the reason behind an immortal's fear and the actual dynamic of how that fear is being used as a motivation of revenge. And I think that I had to look this up. I did not know what the racial memory was. And we discussed this in the previous episode. And I really like the fact that Garrick said, I have been, you know, in analysis longer than like anyone in history. Because that's an interesting thing about immortals, is that he could have gone from psychologist to analyst to psychologist again over, what, a couple hundred years, especially where psychology was being brought to the forefront with Sigmund Freud and Carl Jung and a lot of these psychoanalysts.
I wonder what Sigmund Freud would have thought of him.
But there's an interesting line he says that, after all, part of us is still mortal. And this is probably the thing that you were wrestling with before. It's like, you know, immortals are supposed to live forever. But remember, before they were immortal, they had to live a mortal life and suffer the mortal frailties of that life.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, he's planting the seed here. He's getting in his mind. Mm-hmm. And it's a power trip. I didn't really catch on that earlier, but it's a power trip. I want to mention, what's his name? Lightning?
Corey Lightning.
Corey Lightning? Yeah. The actor who's doing this is actually, he's really playing that guitar. Mm-hmm. And that's called a dobro, which is a blues type of guitar. And I got to tell you, it's pretty impressive. It's pretty good.
Well, I mean, for Highlander, it's no secret that they have slipped in actual real talent from time to time. And I'm sure that somewhere along the line, in Gaumont Television or Reicher Television or you know, whatever deals that they have, they'll bring in like somebody that's underneath the umbrella of that entertainment offices, and they'll say like, hey, you know what? We got a great new artist coming in. Let's kind of promote him on a TV show. Because that guy's a real guitarist. That's no lie.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of like they're wedging that into the story a little bit, where at the detriment of using that time a little bit more wisely. Because as we're doing this commentary, there's not a lot that we can say about there's a guy that's playing guitar and that's awesome. Doesn't really further the story.
Yeah, it's just giving, you know, Richie some screen time and him trying to trying to see what Richie's doing here, and giving Joe and Richie a little rapport as well. So
yeah, they always had great chemistry together, Jim Burns and Stan Kirsch. I thought they did a really good job together.
Yeah,
it's as almost as Joe can almost be like the fatherly figure again.
There's there's that picture again of the knife in the skull. That's some hard. Is that a torture scene there? Time we've seen that.
I think that's an allegory or some type of example of trying to drive the demons, like try to dig them out of your brain.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. They definitely experimented a lot of torture back in those days. Brutal stuff.
Yeah.
Oof.
They were drilling holes in people's heads trying to get that pressure.
Yeah.
Out of them, you know? And here's another example of Anne coming across as trying to do the right thing, and then Duncan responding like, oh, no, you just wanted to see if I did anything about it yet. Like, you know, Duncan's very defensive, and almost
let's call this hashtag Duncan jerk,
or Duncan is a. Because you know,
yes.
I don't know why that they wrote his defensiveness so extreme in this episode.
Yeah,
you would think that he would try and reach out, like, I need help. You know, even for Duncan, I need help.
Yeah. And his dojo, again, is very lit very darkly here.
And here is Braun's second scene, right?
Yeah.
Oh, third scene, because he was on the waterfall.
Yeah.
And, yeah, you can't see a lot in this particular scene. That must have been hard to choreograph. We should ask him about that when we have
but
him
it's,
on again.
But it's cool to watch him in doing the motions here, and you could just see the professionalism that F. Braun is.
Mm-hmm. And now we see that. Oh, this is something that I touched on in our previous episode, where I said, you know what? This is going to happen again between these two. There's going to be some grave misunderstanding that leads them to this. Because I'm going to step out of the commentary for a second. This is the first time that we really saw Duncan attack Richie in this way, where he's kind of out of his mind. The second time we saw that was in Deliverance, because he wasn't really in. Or in Something Wicked, where Duncan's taken over by the Dark Quickening. He wasn't really in possession of his own faculties.
Yeah.
And then what Jill mentioned later on in Ahriman trilogy, where, again, Duncan is being affected by this extreme psychosis that eventually will cause him to murder Richie. So
yeah,
it's interesting that that Richie has suffered this through Duncan.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah, the loss of Richie, to me, it still bugs me, you know, because an immortal that only lives several years after finding out he wasn't immortal, you know, I can see why a lot of fans are upset. And for those that are still bothered by that, seeing this episode is some foreshadowing of that.
There's some really weird, creepy stuff hung up in Duncan's apartment.
And we're going to see a good example of that coming up very shortly here.
And that's Duncan's, flannel shirt. Have you ever seen Duncan ever wear flannel like that?
No. Of course, that was a 90s thing. Everyone owned some flannel. I know you did, right?
This is true. I can't deny
that. I did
that.
Too.
So there it is. There's the manta ray, stingray, weird kind of... Oh.
Creepy eyes, creepy eyes. Oh my God, creepy eyes.
Now, this is a really cool thing. I like this scene a lot because this goes into something that's very tropish about Highlander, and it's almost kind of like in the realm of like a Brenda J. Wyatt kind of scene, you know, where...
You mean investigating Duncan and his secrets?
Exactly. Like, she wants to know a little bit more about the man who she's with and, you know...
His medical history or their lack of.
Exactly. So you have... And she didn't bring it up. You know, her RN brought it up. This is another interesting scene where she's trying to make that connection. And obviously...
But, I mean, from the get-go, Duncan is just being Duncan jerk.
Well, you know? As he slips further into his madness, into his malaise, have you noticed that like his hair is like hardly ever pulled back anymore?
Yeah.
And that 5 o'clock shadow is becoming like 7 o'clock shadow.
Crazy Duncan. Yeah.
Well, look at that. See, maybe you should mind your own business. Like, Anne's just... Yeah, I thought we were in a relationship. Like, yeah, what is that all about?
Yeah. Right, he lays into her.
Yeah, he does. Publicly. And I've never had one of these kind of confrontations. And Anne's like, you know what? I think she's kind of getting at her wit's end. This is my favorite scene of the entire episode. He's so good at this.
The kata? Is that what you call that, right? The kata?
Yeah. Now, I don't know like all of the samurai katana katas, and I'm sure that there are more than one, but you said that Efron McGash assisted him in the choreography of this kata, and this is something that I think is why he wanted to do the sword experience. He wanted to take this expertise and allow people to enjoy that, you know, from a fan standpoint and from becoming a student of sword choreography standpoint, because it's just brilliant.
And you know, Efron complimented Adrian on doing such a great job, and I can only imagine being a fight choreographer, a sword fight choreographer, being able to work with someone like Adrian who knows what he's doing, and being the professional it is, and how much, you know, the chances they can take and making these sword fights look as good as they do.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Adrian has, you know, he has great body knowledge. You know, he knows his balance. He knows his own the ability to push his coordination. He's a tremendous athlete, and he's tremendously coordinated. So being able to do something like that in the realm of that type of a scene is a luxury, I think, that they really were able to tap into. Now you're seeing Duncan kind of fall into the throes of desperation.
Yeah.
You know, you're looking at him in a way where he's starting to become or fall prey to the vulnerabilities of this kind of the psychological assault on him.
Look at Garrick's studio here. I mean, it's got pictures of all of these gargoyles and demons, and there's rocks all over the place, and he's doing the old-fashioned chisel here.
You're right. I agree that I think that I would have liked to have seen a little bit more of Garrick prior to when he was caught, you know, by the local like church magistrate and brought up on trial and brought up on charges before he was burned alive.
It would have made you sympathize him a little bit more, you know. Mm-hmm. you know, like maybe with his showing a flashback with his family before they died. You know?
Do you remember, like, you kind of like jumped on the side of what happened to Jacob Galati and his wife Irena, because it's kind of like the same thing. You know, we got to learn about Jacob and Irena before they were assaulted by Horton and the Watchers. So you were able to really get that emotional connection of,
Hey,
there's a close up of the ring again. So this is what we believe Duncan remembered. Remember, this is all from different points of view because they were running hell or high water out of there.
Yep. So Duncan thinks that he escapes. Mm-hmm.
And from
But now Garrett's realizing reality,
That did not happen. And I don't really think that they were after Duncan so much. They were after somebody just to satisfy the mob.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because back then, and I don't mean to offend anyone of any faith, I really don't, but what we understand from back then is that as long as you could satisfy the bloodthirsty nature of this Puritan, tyrannical mob, then you were able to keep everyone under the thumb of the religion, right?
And if you were good with the word, you can convince anyone of something, you know?
Exactly.
And especially if you were in a power position like that, and to rile up the mob to, you know, make this happen. So this is one of the things that triggered him to not like Duncan, and he's gonna take him down in his way.
You left me, but I won't leave you. He says. Now we understand that Garrick is far beyond his guise of Duncan's former friend and somebody who just happened to show up in Seacouver with this exhibit. This is a very well orchestrated, very well choreographed plan that he has been crafting for centuries. That is some revenge personified.
Yeah. Just started thinking about the conversations we had in the past about what if the Kurgan had won. Mm-hmm. What if Garrick had won?
And he was close. I mean, Duncan is he's going full Wolverine, pretty close here. You know? Yeah.
It just seems like a weird spot to meet, though. Like down here at this river or lake edge, I think. And I always thought this was kind of weird.
Yeah,
it's a cool setting, though.
Yeah, and again, she's trying, you know, and
yeah.
I don't know, I don't think that she's saying anything that he won't respond to with some kind of cynicism, you know, or malice.
Yeah, the character of Anne is very, very patient, and Lisa Howard, I think, is doing a great job delivering that.
And she's being a doctor. She's like, you know what? I know you're going through a lot of stress. Here are some, here's something to help you relax.
Yeah.
You know, and she's being as good a sport as she possibly can. You know, Duncan's always just kind of like lashing out in varying degrees of intensity. And she's just like, hey, you know what? I'm just trying to help. I thought we were in this together. You know, she's trying to find her way in, and Duncan's just throwing up this giant steel wall.
If we have a second here, if she knew about his immortality in the world of immortals, how do you think this scene would have played differently?
I think that, well, if that were the case, then I don't think that Duncan would be as standoffish, because he's trying to basically say, you know what? You don't understand what's going on because I haven't allowed you to understand what's going on. I haven't given you that right to step into my world. And for obvious reasons, because as fans at this stage in the game, when we're watching season 3, we know what happened with Tessa.
Yeah,
you know, so we as fans are projecting that this is the reason why he's keeping her at a distance. He doesn't know what's going on with himself. He's not going to allow her to be put in that position of vulnerability. So, this again. So, what I like about this particular scene between Joe and Richie is that it's very much like, Richie doesn't understand McCloud. He's looking to Joe for help, very much like Something Wicked. And then Joe, you know, he throws down some wisdom here. Like 400 years after everyone's come, for your head, maybe this is the point in time where he's just snapped. And then Richie's like, do you believe all this head shrinking stuff, like psychology? Do you believe all this head shrinking mumbo jumbo? And this is where Joe's watcher training kicks in. Garrick.
Yeah, John Garrick's not a stable dude.
So he says the man's been insane for centuries. So we have to believe now from what Joe is saying and from the benefit of the Watcher's Chronicles, because he knows everything about McCloud and all the Watchers that have watched McCloud before him, that John Garrick has been insane to the point where we're seeing him in flashbacks still is insane.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. So now that starts coloring our understanding of John Garrick's friendship with McCloud.
Can you imagine being the watcher assigned to watch John Garrick?
Entry 17 something something. Crazy Pants McGee is dancing around with chickens. Yeah.
Saw him peering through Sigmund Freud's window.
But see, here's a scene that kind of justifies his behavior with Anne a little bit, because he's even treating Richie in that same way.
Yeah.
He's driving everyone to a distance.
Yeah.
And Richie's been
turning
around,
everyone against him.
Right, and Richie's been around him for the longest, and Richie's like, you know what? Forget you, man. I don't need this. But, you know, Richie has that luxury because he's been and seen Duncan through his darkest times so far. The death of Tessa. Yeah. So I think this is, we're coming up to the scene where this is kind of where Jill's point is being made about how Shadows is unpacking the world building of the Ahriman trilogy later on, where Duncan right now is at a point where he doesn't understand or believe reality anymore. He's almost at Garrick's final endgame, and he's like, you know what? I need something to get me out of here. And this is shades of Brian Cullen. And I've mentioned this before, where Brian Cullen used opium in San Francisco and, you know, in modern time, like huge amounts of cocaine and drugs to dull that, I guess, whatever that feeling is, where they just can't control this racial memory, this oncoming death that they can't control.
Right.
Right. So yeah. I think that in some ways that this episode, including the Brian Cullen story and including Ahriman, these are those stories where immortals can't just solve everything physically.
Right. Right. Yeah. I got to ask you a question, though. With him taking all those pills, wouldn't that kill him like it would any human, but then he would come back to life? He took like the whole thing.
Yeah, I mean, it really depends on like how bad, like how strong the prescription was, but maybe it's this quickening that allows him to survive how bad that is.
So the shadow quickly dispenses of Richie. Did he not kill him because he didn't want to wake Duncan up with the quickening? Why do you think he didn't kill him?
Well, that's an interesting thing, because as far as we know, up until this point, we've always believed that the shadow was actually an hallucination. But now that he's fought Richie, we know that it's not a hallucination. So,
yeah.
So, but Duncan still believes that it is. Very much like that he believed that the Richie hallucination was Ahriman. But there's the ring that was focused on for several scenes. And Duncan's like,
yeah.
You know, even in his drug convoluted state, he recognized that, oh, no, this is for reals.
This is for real. I know this guy.
And Garrick has finally shown Duncan his endgame, where I was like, I've directed everything that I've learned about mental manipulation and dream manipulation into you.
Just noticed Duncan's I just noticed Duncan's record collection over there. I wonder what he listens to.
Well, pretty soon. Not
but it's going to get destroyed here shortly.
But I think that the reason why he didn't just outright take out Duncan is because of what he's saying here. It's like, you know, you can't even imagine, you know, smelling your own skin blistering. And Duncan's like, I thought I saved you. I mean, you know.
I just realized, I think I missed this the first several times I watched this. He's not just getting a power trip on this. He's trying to make Duncan suffer.
Uh-huh.
And he's trying to take him down, knock him down bit by bit, instead of just killing him and putting him out of his misery. He is trying to hurt him as much as he can. And I didn't really get that the first time.
So Garrick here is saying that I've spent centuries controlling my dreams, projecting them so that you would live what I suffered through. And I think he wanted to torture Duncan as he was tortured. You know, he wanted Duncan to suffer, to lose everything, and to hit rock bottom the way that he hit rock bottom. Now, you know, logically, you know, think that, okay, Duncan tried to save him from that mob, and then he's like, oh, well, hold on a second. We got to focus on the quickening here. In your dreams. I love that. Okay, so I'll get back to my point after the quickening, because Highlander 101, folks, do not take out an immortal in your own house, because bad right. things happen. If you have anything precious in your house, like precious china, collectibles, autograph trading cards.
But we have to give Duncan some credit here for at least having his apartment on the top shelf. Yeah. I'm sorry, on the top floor.
I like the way that they film this, because it feels very unsettling the way that they show him in that kind of selfie stick kind of view, right?
Right.
It feels very unsettling. And I mentioned this before in 38, where I said, you don't get to choose which quickening you can take or leave behind. So now he is absorbing all of Garrick's craziness and his experience with dream manipulation into his quickening, into himself. So, and he'll probably make Richie like clean up the mess too.
Do you think Duncan owns that whole building, or do you think there's tenants below him wondering what's going on?
Well, we know he owes the dojo in the loft, but yeah, it's, oh, the dojo, I think, is on the bottom. So now, because he has gotten over his demons and his shadows, his hair's pulled back and he's shaven.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
Because a hero has to be clean shaven. I really did. I was looking for that statue in particular during the Highlander convention. Now, I found this really interesting, him rearranging the swords like that, because that's actually the proper way that swords should be displayed. The handles facing that way and the blades facing upwards. I found that really particularly interesting that he did that.
Don't you face them down? Doesn't that mean that you are... It's the peaceful way to do it, where you're at peace, but if you turn them up, you're in a state of war. Isn't there some meaning behind that? That Braun had mentioned that in one of our posts a long time ago when someone was showing their sword displays. And so because he's at peace now, he turned them facing down.
Well, he turned them upwards, because I always believed that the blades always were pointing towards heaven.
Oh, yeah. I guess the curvature, like, I guess that's what I thought. They're kind of facing down. I see what you mean. Okay.
So, are we okay? I'm not sure. But obviously, the damage has been done in a way.
Yeah. Yeah. Right? She's spooked, and she has every right to be. And he's trying to say everything's okay, but no, it's not.
I mean, he didn't do the best job, like, trying to work through his situation with her. He never let her in. And
yeah.
I think in some ways, as the audience, she was kind of like our surrogate throughout this episode. So in many ways, we felt like, why aren't you letting us connect these two characters together? Where is this disconnect happening? And why aren't we allowing that to move forward? I think that's something that was very frustrating to watch the first time around.
Yeah, agreed. I remember thinking that myself because, you know, I liked both the characters and I wanted them to connect more. And I think the writers lost a golden opportunity not letting her in on his world. And I'll keep and I'm gonna stand by that. Mm-hmm. I really think even if they weren't like, you know, having the love affair that Tess and Duncan did, at least they could have had some connection, you know. But they probably had other reasons. Maybe they wanted to bring Amanda back in, you know, who knows.
I never really felt that they had a lack of chemistry. I felt that, like you said, that they were kind of exacting out what the writers were giving them.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you think they were kind of also not wanting to paint themselves in a corner of when they do move the production to France, mm-hmm. where they don't think they were going to bring Anne's character, Lisa Howard, over there to film scenes? Do you think that had something to do with it?
No, I don't think so. I just, again, it's one of those situations where I'm not sure if they really wanted to move forward with her as a character in some respects because maybe they were hearing too much fan backlash. Maybe they just felt like on screen or behind the scenes, the characters weren't connecting. But we have finished our conversation, our commentary about Shadows. That was fast.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
Whew.
But one of the
average episode was about like 48 minutes, something like that.
But, one of the things that I wanted to bring up was that Garrick was planning his revenge ever since that he recovered from being burned alive. Now, a couple of things that's were a little inconsistent for me about this episode, just from kind of like a storytelling standpoint. If Duncan believed that Garrick made it out of that village, they would have met up somewhere afterwards to make sure that everybody was safe. Duncan would have dropped off the girl and said, go back to your family, get out of town. You're obviously branded as a witch, start your life somewhere else. I need to find Garrick. And all he really said was, I saw you on that horse and I thought you made it out. So I found that a little wonky when it came to the writing because Duncan's like, oh, you made it out. I'm guilt free, right? Because I saved you. But obviously that wasn't the case.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Well, this was really cool, Norm. I love doing these things with you, and I love doing these fan picks. I love because what we have at Blood of Kings and the fan interaction, I talk about this every time. I love it. I love checking in on Blood of Kings, and I want to thank Jill again for just being a great fan on Blood of Kings and sharing everything that she's been sharing, and she's been doing a lot of tweeting as well. And I thought maybe that would be a good segue into reminding our listeners about the contest that we have going on right now, our Blood of Kings social media contest. And Jill has been participating, and we would like for those of you that have a Twitter account to also participate if you haven't already. It's the hashtag Highlander101 contest here, and we're looking to get more followers on Twitter and more just more communication and fun through interacting with Blood of Kings and our Blood of Kings friends through social media and on Twitter. This is regarding the episode 33, Surviving the Game, aka Highlander 101. We wanted to get new fans into Highlander, and we thought a great way to do that is to get people on Twitter. And what we want you to do is to tweet at us or quote our tweets with the hashtag Highlander101, and of course at Blood of Kings Pod. You can also do this on Facebook. Just make sure you use the hashtag Highlander101 and get new people into Highlander and into Blood of Kings and listening to our shows and participating and joining our group on Blood of Kings. And we have a really cool prize, and that is a signed copy of author John Mosby's Fearful Symmetry, An Essential Guide to All Things Highlander, the perfect book for new and old fans of Highlander. And we use it all the time. Right, Norm?
Now, we actually just used that the last episode where we went over the review of Shadows, the synopsis of Shadows.
Yes. And you can also follow John Mosby on Twitter. He's at There Goes the Day. But also, if you want to buy your own copy, please go on Amazon and search for his book. Help support him. And also, if you have bought his book, leave an awesome review for him because he likes that as well. And he would love to sell more of his books. And we'd like to support him as well. So please, please, if you have a account on Twitter, please follow us and tweet at us. We'd love to hear from you. And we're going to announce the winner after May, which we're going to have an anniversary. Our 1 year anniversary show is coming up soon. Norm, can you believe it?
1 year. That's pretty amazing. And you know what? Taking a look backwards all the way to our first fandom flashbacks, our first five part fandom flashback, and all the way to now, it's just getting started.
I know. Gosh, and it's flown by, but then it feels like it's been a long ride as well, and a long fun ride. I'll tell you, we've covered a lot of fun stuff, and it's just everything's developing too. You know, the comic book, the new reboot of the series. It's really exciting. With that said, by the way, because we were talking about Twitter, we want to let people know that where you can find us. You can find us, Bloody Kings, on the Fandom Podcast Network on iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, Google Play for your Android users. On Instagram, you can find us at Blood of Kings Pod. Of course, Bloody Kings on Facebook, a Highlander fandom group. It is a closed group, but we'll get you on there. And we've talked about the Highlander CCG as well. Norm, recently you guys did a great job recently talking about the second edition with Philip, and you can find us at Bloody Kings, a Highlander CCG collectible card game page. If you want to find out how and where to find those cards and how to play the game, you can contact us. Please email us at bloodykingspodcast@gmail.com. As we mentioned before, Twitter at bloodykingspod. I'm Kevin. I'm on Twitter and Instagram at Spartan_Phoenix. Norm, where can we find you on Instagram and Twitter?
You can always find me there at Starfighter1701.
All right. And of course, our editor and frequent guest here on the show, Mike, can be found on at The Immortal Chimoli. So glad he got that. Norm, as we wrap this up, any final thoughts on Shadows? Jill's awesome suggestion for a fan pick Highlander episode.
Well, I said in the previous episode, I think that this was a really interesting pick for any episode for us to cover. And we're really looking forward to the next fan pick suggestion because it can go one of two ways. It can be one of those legendary episodes, or it can be an episode that we haven't really thought about in a while. And I think that's really interesting for us, Kevin, because it allows us to take a look back at something in Highlander that we aren't always familiar with. Because, again, there are the cream that rise to the top type of episodes, like your Band of Brothers and your Samurais and your Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse episodes. And then there are those smaller episodes like, oh, I don't know, Bad Day in Building A. Because I will talk about those episodes because they are part of the Highlander universe. So thank you very much, Jill, for not only suggesting this episode, but for being such a great supporter of our show, working with us behind the scenes and promoting us on Twitter and social media, and even messaging us from time to time and talking about what you love about Highlander. I know you're a big Highlander 2 fan prior to the Renegade version. She loves the original Zeist version, and I would still defend that. I think that has a lot of merit. So this is a challenge for all of our listeners out there. And Kevin and I are looking forward to your next suggestion for the Highlander fan pick. But it was awesome covering this episode. And we now have concluded our second fan pick.
Yes. Again, I want to thank Jill as well. By the way, for those of you that don't know, she lives in Japan. And she's turned me on to these Yahoo auctions that they have over there. That's a thing, not eBay. And she's pointed me in the direction of laser discs that you can't find elsewhere. and she's helped me find those and bring those over here and feed my collection of old school physical media. So I appreciate your help with that, Jill. And thank you again for supporting us. And we would love to see some what's going to happen in the next fan pick. I'm kind of curious. Norm, let me ask you. Let me put you on the spot here. How do you want to choose that?
Well, first of all, I think that it has to be somebody, obviously, that we haven't chosen before. So I'm sorry for Jill. That was your entry, at least until the next year. Maybe we'll restart everything in another year. And for Vince, because Vince chose Mortal Sins. So for all of you fans out there that are listening to this show, what we would like for you to do, for us, for Kevin and I to choose the show, is we will choose the show for the next fan pick from a tweet on Twitter and on social media that has the hashtag Highlander101. That's the caveat for the next choice.
Nice. And tweet us at Bloody Kings Pod. Mm-hmm. I like that. Yeah. All right.
So that is it's for you to get more involved with us on social media and for us to be able to say, like, okay, for Highlander fans out there, what would you like to see us cover on Blood of Kings? Hashtag Highlander101.
And have fun with your tweet. Give us a quick, description in that 140 character allotment of why, you want a particular episode to be covered. So I like that.
And,
good job,
okay,
Norm.
So if they choose finale, part one and two, we will do finale and we will do the commentary of finale and then part two of finale and the commentary of part two of finale. So that's four episodes right there.
Yeah, if you're going to choose finale, you got to choose them both.
Exactly. Yeah, you can't. I just want to do finale part one.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you again, Norm, and thank you again, Jill. We appreciate it, and this has been a blast. And just one last thing I'd like to say is, originally, like I had mentioned, I was not a big fan of this episode because I didn't really look into it. But it has made me think. It's opened my eyes. It's gotten inside me. It's got me questioning things, which is a good thing. And I appreciate this episode a lot more now that we have dived into it and analyzed it and realized the chances that it took. And I appreciate that. And the what could have been with the relationship with Anne and Duncan. It's always interesting to speculate. And that's what I love about doing this. You get to dive deep into this. So, Norm, thank you very much, man. Appreciate you.
On the next t-shirts that I'm doing for this year, I'm thinking about doing hashtag Dr. Team Dr. Ann Lindsay. I don't know.
I like that. We're going to have fun with that, definitely.
Yeah.
Well, I'm Kevin. On behalf of my co-host, Norman, thanks everyone for listening. And join us again next time here on the Fandom Podcast Network for another episode of Blood of Kings, a Highlander podcast. Norm, that sensation you are feeling is the quickening. We are one. We are brothers. Goodbye.